The agenda first. Is it 11 or 10?
11.
11.
Presentation.
My 11 is the audit committee.
Oh, there's an amendment.
We got it.
The amended agenda is.
Oh, I've got.
Cal first.
Thank you.
Yes.
You taking the lead on this, Christine?
Yes, I can take the lead on item 11. We became an independent district January 1st, and we started looking at healthcare options. Currently, we receive our healthcare through the county. We submitted an application to CalPERS and was an accepted employer under the CalPERS program, so we asked a representative of CalPERS to come and talk about their plans today, to give you an overview of the design of their plans and what they have to offer. So I want to introduce Matt DeMello from CalPERS.
Morning, board. Thank you for having me here today.
Good morning.
My name, as Christina said, is Matt DeMello. I'm a marketing analyst with CalPERS, representing the health benefits program. My sole responsibility is to educate eligible agencies on our program, and if they're so interested in joining our program, to assist them in that process. That's my only vested interest. I don't get paid any more or less if you join or not, so I really do have a resource for you and Christina. That being said, I'd like to start off with telling you a little bit about our program. We refer to it as PEMCA quite a bit. PEMCA is the Public Employees Medical and Hospital Care Act. That is the legislation that allows us to offer our program. It establishes all the rules and requirements that we must follow, you must follow, and the members must follow. As legislation, state law, it does supersede any current MOUs or CBAs that you do have with your employees. So if there is a conflict between one of those and our legislation, we would trump that. Another really unique thing about our program as legislation is that you have a great deal of influence over this program. If there's an aspect that you don't like about it, you can talk to your local legislative representative and have them sponsor legislation to have the rules change. So you won't find that at any other program. Some of the other unique features of our program is our administrative fee. That is currently 0.32%, just under a third of 1%. That's the only fee that we charge, and it is billed on the total premiums billed. Our premiums are broken up into five regions in California, so whatever premiums correlate to Contra Costa County, which are the Bay Area premiums, they'll be competitive within the other options within the area. We also have the live work rule, where your members may choose any plan available to them through their qualifying zip code, and they can choose either their employer zip code or their residential zip code to qualify for a plan. So if you have an employee who did like myself and commuted in from Sacramento County, we have different rates and different plans available in Sacramento County. So they may benefit by using their residential zip code for a lower premium or a different plan. We do not require 100% participation. So if a member can receive benefits or coverage through a spouse or alternative means, they're more than welcome to do that and opt out. That does not impact the rates at all. We also operate as the health benefit officer for all retirees. So one of the unique program aspects of our program is that you are required to extend benefits to eligible retirees. And then we do process all the enrollments, change plans and everything for the retirees. We also coordinate billing for all of that, except only if for members, agencies who contract through PERS for pension or the CalSTRS system. The 1937 Act County, the agency would be billed 100% for the retiree premiums, and they would have to reconcile.
Let me ask you a question regarding the retirees, and I'm specifically thinking of where they live. So a retiree, a person lives in Contra Costa County, they retire under CalPERS, and say they move to Washington, and there's a Kaiser facility in Washington, do they automatically have that available to them?
Yes.
And the same thing for Hawaii or wherever else Kaiser is?
Wherever else Kaiser is, there is a separate out-of-state Kaiser rate available.
Yeah, the rate would probably be different. Thank you.
And then there are also opportunities for children, dependent children of adults who go away for school. There's also plans available nationally.
Okay.
Anthem and Blue Cross both have away-from-home care plans. And then two of our PPO plans have global coverage. You could retire to Italy and still utilize the same
benefits. Go all over the world.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Matt, well, we're still in this. Anthem uses 19 regions in California. You're describing five. Can you give us some sense of who all is included in the region the Contra Costa County would be in?
I don't have that. I could actually answer that specifically if you give me just a moment. So in the Bay Area region, the counties included in that region are Alameda, Amador, Contra Costa, Marin, Napa, Nevada, San Francisco, San Joaquin, San Mateo, Santa Clara, Santa Cruz, Solano, Sonoma, Sutter, and Yuba counties.
You know, typically San Francisco is the highest cost region.
Correct. And there have been discussions about realigning some of the regions. Just last year, we received a presentation from Representative Yolo County. Until through last year, Yolo was considered part of the Bay Area, but they presented to our board and made an appeal to have them the Sacramento region based on cost of living and wages based in the Sacramento region. And Yolo was successfully moved into the Sacramento region effective this year. So. There are aspects to the program that do change, and this is one of them with cause and consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Employer requirements. As Christina alluded to earlier, there is an application process to make sure that we do only allow public agencies into our program. The IRS is reviewing the definitions of public agencies, and if we happen to let a non-public agency into our program, we could lose our tax-exempt status, and theoretically they could come in and unmake our entire program. So we do have to vet all applicants. The agency must offer a retirement system that is funded wholly in part by public funds. It's not a problem here. The employer must also offer all available plans to the member. They're not allowed to pick and choose between the plans we offer and just offer, say, Kaiser and a PPO option. The member has to be free to choose from any plan available to them through their qualifying zip code. And then most importantly, the employer must make a minimum financial contribution toward the health premiums of their employees, both active and retired. The minimum contribution is essentially a guarantee that the employer is not going to pass 100% of the premium on to the employee. The minimum contribution is defined in PEMCA. It's tied to the medical component of the Federal Consumer Price Index. It does change every year on the calendar year. It's currently $125 per month. Historically, it has increased $3 to $4 a year. So that's the absolute floor. The employer may go above and beyond that, contract at a higher amount, or contract at this minimum and then external to our program exceed that amount. For eligibility for active employees, we want to make sure they're eligible to participate in the retirement system, and that's what the first two points are. The appointment must be intended to last at least 6 months and a day. That means they're going to be a full-time ongoing appointment, not a seasonal employee, like a lifeguard who only works maybe 3 or 4 months out of the year. They wouldn't be eligible. Work at least half-time. full-time is defined by the employer, so 40 hours, at least half-time is 20 or more. And those two requirements are typical of receiving a retirement contribution. We want to ensure that the people have a receive funds into retirement. Because they can continue these benefits into retirement, we want to make sure they have a means to pay for these health premiums if they elect to continue the benefits. And then, just as I mentioned before, that our state law trumps the CBAs and MOUs, federal law trumps our state law. So we had to change the definition of an employee to accommodate the Affordable Care Act. So if you do have somebody who doesn't meet these requirements that I just listed, and you want to extend benefits to them, and they meet the definition of an employee under the ACA, provide that to us in writing, and that person would be eligible. For annuitants or retirees, they must retire within 120 days of their separation date. Separation date is the last day on payroll. Retirement date is the date that they are officially retired. So it's a four-month window for them to become officially retired. This is to protect the employer from an employee quitting, going to work somewhere else for 6 months, a couple years, finally retired, and then going back and go, oh yeah, CCRA contracts for CalPERS, I want those benefits. Well, they're not gonna be eligible now. So it's there to protect the employer from a very large, potentially large retiree liability. They had to have been eligible at the time of separation. So those requirements I just spoke to for active employees apply to the annuitants. And then they have to receive a monthly warrant. So if you have somebody who takes a lump sum payout, isn't vested in the system, they don't have that monthly allowance from their pension system to pay for the premiums, they're not eligible either. Very important is once an annuitant is eligible, they are always eligible. So if someone opts out at retirement, goes and gets health benefits somewhere else, 5 years down the road, if they want to opt back in during an open enrollment or qualifying period, they can do so. And this goes on as long as there's a resolution electing to join our program. Once a termination resolution has been filed and you want to leave our program and go get your medical benefits somewhere else, all these requirements go away. All these annuitants would be forced out of the program. Everything is tied at the employer level. We don't do individual plans. So once the employer leaves, all the employees go with the employer. Some of the cost savers to our program, again, we don't require 100% participation. Employees and annuitants may opt out. We don't allow dual enrollments or coverages. So if you're a subscriber on a plan, you cannot also be claimed as a dependent. Use myself as an example. I work at CalPERS. I'm eligible for the benefits. My wife works for a public agency who contracts for CalPERS benefits. We can each have our own individual plans, or one of us may be claimed as a dependent on the other. But we can't both be subscribers and dependents, because then both are employers and we are paying a higher rate than is necessary. Our plans, the HMO plans, have a 95 to 96% actuarial rate. So they're very rich benefits. There's no reason for dual coverage.
Is there any restriction on which one you go with?
No. And then this does only apply to CalPERS plans. So if you have a spouse who works somewhere else and has private party insurance through their employer, you can do dual coverage then at that point. It's just within CalPERS. Similarly, we don't allow split enrollments. I'll use myself as an example again. My wife and I, we only have one child, but if we had three children, all three children would need to be under one plan. We don't want to split the children up and have a two-party rate and a family rate or two family rates. Again, you're both the employer and the employer paying more money for no reason. And then we also do dependent eligibility verifications periodically. This is where we contract with a third-party agency to request proof of eligibility for all dependents, marriage certificates, birth certificates, to make sure that divorcees aren't covered because only spouses are eligible, make sure that they are legitimate dependents on the plan. We're just about completing the current cycle and we've saved over $4 million this year by removing ineligible dependents. Getting more into specifics with your situation, I mentioned the zip codes earlier. Under the 94520 zip code, the employer zip code, these are the plans available. We have six HMO plans, two from Anthem Blue Cross, the Select or Traditional, two from Blue Shield, the Net Value and Access Plus, Kaiser Permanente, and United Healthcare Alliance plan. In 2016, we also have HealthNet that is going to be available in the Bay Area region. We don't have the specifics on the zip codes that it's going to be available in yet. That'll be announced in the next couple of weeks, so you may potentially have seven HMO plans available. You'll notice the two Anthem plans and the two Blue Shield plans. All of our HMOs have the same benefit designs. The difference is going to be in the monthly premiums. And then in these two plans, one is a narrow network plan and the other is a full network plan. So under the Anthem Select and the Blue Shield Net Value plan, those are the narrow network plans. You have a smaller group of providers, doctors and hospitals that you can seek services from. Those are typically less expensive. The carriers have identified them as more cost effective. Yes, sir.
I know the county has CCHP for safety members through PERS. Is it possible to get CCHP for the members here?
It's an association plan, so as long as they are members of the association, that plan would be available.
Would you repeat that? Would be available?
Would be, as long as they're association members, yes.
What do you mean by association members?
The CCCHP is the
is the county
county plan,
right?
No,
the county hospital.
I thought basically you were speaking to the CHP.
No,
plan.
Not the CHP plan.
Under PEMCA, you're not allowed to offer alternative plans to anybody impacted by a resolution. So if anyone who is subject to a PEMCA resolution, subject to the act, where you're getting your benefits to us, can only receive benefits through us. The CCERA would not be allowed to offer an alternative.
Well, I understand that. What happened when we went over to CalPERS, we got the CCH plan approved as an approved plan through CalPERS.
Okay. I was not aware of that. There are, I think, 13 instances. Just went through this with somebody in Riverside County where they had a similar situation. If it's an approved alternative plan, then yes, but that's very rare, so I wasn't expecting.
And they'll be able to get that?
Yes.
Okay.
So we did talk to CalPERS about this, and CCHP isn't going to be available for CSER employees.
It's not going to be available, or?
Our preference is that it would be included, but we're not able to.
Yeah, so it's too different.
Yeah, I don't have the specifics. I'd have to research it. Sounds like Gail already has. But if it is an approved alternative plan, then. But if you've already researched it,
because we have it as safety members,
right.
When we negotiated CalPERS, we got that plan approved as an approved plan for the group. And that's why I'm wondering.
I would have to research it. I'm going off generalities and the information available. Mm-hmm.
Just as a follow-up, I mean, like you said, you're not aware of it, and yet he's pointing out something. Maybe the person Gail talked to was not aware that there was a previous agreement with the sheriff's
office.
We're
able to do that because you were still county employees.
Yeah, we're not talking. These guys are not county employees.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
I mean, this is something, we have a number of employees in CCHP, so
okay.
We really wanted to try and keep that as an option.
And PERS will make it an approved plan like they did with us?
No.
No, that's interesting.
I'd have to research it. That's something I can certainly follow up with Christina on.
Yeah, if you can, yeah, because I'm just curious why they won't. They did it for when we did it years ago. Why won't they? It's in the system already.
Is this actually something we talked about that I'm not recalling?
Yeah.
Right, okay. When she mentioned it, that's why it started ringing a bell.
Yeah.
So, Christina and I actually did have some communication regarding this issue, and flipped my mind. It was over a month ago. So under, there's a government code 22834, which allows the exception to the rule that I was discussing. And Contra Costa County is an employer. It's tied to the employer. And as the county is an employer that's allowed one of these exceptions, as she said, as you became your own independent entity, though,
right,
you're not an approved employer for this alternative plan. So that would be something that requires CalPERS board approval, and something that would need to be presented, and if you wanted to pursue that, would okay. be something. At this point, I'm not aware of the full process to get an approval plan. As far as I'm aware, they have not approved one in some time, but I'm not sure if one has been presented.
Okay.
So that's the HMOs. There are three PPOs available as well. There's a PERS Choice and Select. Those are both 80-20 plans, and PERS Care is our 90-10 plan, and I'll talk about those in just a moment. Here are the basic benefit designs for the HMO plans. As I said, all the benefit designs are standardized across our HMOs, so they all have the same $15 physician copay, $50 ER, it's waived if you're admitted. The pharmacy is $5 30-day generics, $10 for mail order. So really the difference when you look at the plans is gonna be the providers and the monthly premiums. Under the PPO designs, the first choice and first select are the two 80-20 plans. That is, the insurer pays 80%, you pay 20%. Up to the maximum out of pocket. They both do have the same calendar year deductible and maximum out of pocket. They have a $20 physician office visit. The big difference, as I said, between these two is going to be the networks. The Select is a narrow network plan. The Choice is a full network. And then Select also does something with the hospitals. I'll point out here on the hospital line, 20% at tier one hospitals, 30% at tier two hospitals. We use the Anthem network for our PPO plans, and Anthem's identified hospitals as either tier one or tier two. Tier one hospitals are more cost effective, and if you go to a more cost effective plan, they want you to use those cost effective hospitals. If you elect to go to a tier two hospital, you're gonna pay 30% rather than the 20%. So under the Select plan, you have to do a little homework. In an emergency, if you're in a car accident, you know, the ambulance is gonna take you to the nearest hospital. You don't have any control over that. You'd be billed at the 20%. But if you elect to go seek services at a tier two hospital, you would be billed at a higher. So I always like to make sure that the distinction's aware. Some people just looked at premium and gravitate towards that plan, but they need to know the implications of that.
Question.
Yes, sir.
Don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but 20% of what? 10% of what?
Of the total bill. So
any bill charged?
Any bill. No, there
must be a UCR or an allowable maximum or something.
Yes, that's the max out of pocket, the $3,000 for an individual or $6,000 for a family. So
let's take a hypothetical ambulance ride. It's $1,000, but you must have a maximum allowable charge. 800 or whatever it might be, of which you'd pay 80%.
You pay under the deductible, you would pay the first $500, and then you would pay 20% of the remaining balance up until you met your maximum out of pocket limit.
Regardless of what the provider charges? So in other words, if they charge $2,000, you'd be responsible for the remainder of that?
If the ambulance charges the insurer $2,000, the insurer would have you pay your deductible and then 20% of the remaining balance.
Matt, you don't have negotiated rates?
Yeah.
Whatever retail is what this is all based on?
Yes. Correct.
I mean, you have 2 days in the hospital today, you're $10,000. But the negotiated rate for an Anthem would be $1,000. So you're describing this plan would deal with $10,000 as the amount it'd reimburse?
I would have to look in.
It can't be. You've got to have negotiated.
There must be an allowable maximum or a usual, customary, reasonable, whatever it might be. Because I don't believe it would be whatever the market would bear.
Yeah, I'm not on that end of it, so I'm not aware. I'd have to look into that. I'm sorry.
You pay. I got a PPO, and what we do is pay a. And say I get a bill for the bill is $500. Anthem adjusts that. Say okay, we only give you $250 to doctor.
Right.
Then what they do is say okay, you pay 10% of that $250. They adjust it to what.
That's
the
my
lower
point,
amount
though,
is.
Lee. There's patient protection. There's a copayment protection
right.
as to how much can be billed to the patient. And what I'm hearing from Matt, without further discussion, I guess, is that there is no protection.
Well, like I said, I got a PPO, and I get bills that are $3, $10. I mean,
that's
a hospital
stay. You've got a preferred provider there because there's a contract between the carrier and the provider.
Right.
What happens out of network?
You're not identifying in network and out of network. In network, you have negotiated rates between the carrier
right.
And the hospital or other provider. Out of network, you haven't agreed upon. Amount that the carrier
right, it's 20% versus 10%.
I get it, but there must be some patient protection for in-network providers. There must be a maximum on the amount that can be billed to the patient over and above the allowance. Out of network, I get it. All bets are off.
Well, you pay like say the $500. Okay, the beginning of the year, they charge you up to that $500. Then the 10% kicks in. I never hit the max to say, okay, after 3,000 you, or 6,000 for family, you, they take the whole.
I'm just pointing out the devil's in the details when it comes right. to the charges. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just saying. It's just
I'll look into that. I'm not in a PPO plan myself, so I've never researched the details and how they really operate on our aspect of it. So I'll have to look into it and follow up with Christina and pass it along.
Okay.
On the final PPO plan is the PERS care plan. It's the 90-10 plan. So again, insurer paid 90%. You'd be responsible up to 10%. The big difference with this plan is the 90-10 aspect, of course, and that utilizes the full network. But there's also a $250 hospital deductible on it because it is a richer benefit plan. They don't want you just going to the ER and going to a hospital to seek services. They still want you to go to a physician and you know not using the ER and the hospital as your doctor's office. So that's on there as a deterrent. The calendar year deductible is the same, but the max out of pocket is lower, $2,000 for an individual or $4,000 for a family. Here are the monthly premiums for all the plans available that I showed earlier. Single, the two-party, and family rates also shows the increase over last year. The increases are kind of all over the board. They range anywhere from just over 3 1/3% all the way up to almost 19% on the Blue Shield Net Value plan. I do have some history on this for you. Here's an 11-year rate history for all of our HMO plans in this region. Up until 2013, we only offered Blue Shield and Kaiser plans. In 2014, we introduced the additional plans, the United Healthcare, the Anthem HMOs, some of the other regions. There's a Sharp Health plan and HealthNet, trying to introduce some competition into our own world to bring the rates down. So you can see there's a smaller than average increase in 2014, which is this bar here. And they're starting to level off a little bit. The Big Blue Shield increase, they took one last year as well. They really held their rates down in 2014, and it kind of, they had higher than expected claims, so they are having to adjust their rates to correct for that. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know, just out of, I added up the yearly, it's what, 206 to 216, it's 10 years, and I added up the average percentage, and it's like 90% increase from the first year, 06 to 16. That's like healthcare providers are 9% or more a year in increases. COLAs don't even come near that. Cost of living raises don't even come near that. It's just frustrating as a citizen seeing this and reading this, and even as a member of this board, how healthcare has increased over the past 10 years. And we're here trying to provide a plan that's for our workers, that's going to be, you know, financially feasible for them. And I'm looking at this and going, my God.
How? You know how well the Affordable Care Act has held costs down.
How? I don't know if it's just the Affordable Care Act.
That was one
Care
of the
Act
promises.
Hasn't been in effect for 10 years. It's only been in effect for four.
Right. Yeah, I understand. And we could have a lengthy discussion on that.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is the time for that.
Matt, just to confirm, these premiums are for this region.
Correct.
All right. It's not a blended set of rates.
No, it is specifically for this region. So the Sacramento rates regions are different. The
would
LA
would look different.
Regions are different, yes.
Yeah, I just want to confirm, going back one slide to the monthly premiums, that column, I believe you said that column on the far right says percent increase, that it is these are the increases that occurred last year for these plans?
These are the total premiums. Mm-hmm. For the plans, and the percent increase is the amount those premiums increased versus last year.
Okay. And so have these plans all had their, I guess I should ask, what's your open enrollment date where you see the increases? What point in the year does that occur?
So we actually announce our rates mid-June every year.
Okay.
And then they don't go into effect until January 1st of the following year. So you actually know for roughly 6.5 months what your rates are going to be during for the following calendar year.
And so the rates we're seeing here are the rates that will be in effect on January 1st?
Correct.
Okay.
And you bring up a good point, too, talking about the timelines. There's no minimum amount of time you have to be in our program. You're not really signing a contract. You're signing a resolution agreeing to be subject to the PEPCA legislation. As such, you can cancel it any year. You have 60 days from when our rates are announced in June to file this termination resolution, and then that would be effective January 1st of the following year. So if you come in for 2 years and don't like our program, you want to leave and go somewhere else, you can do that. It's not a problem. The flip side of that is that you're going to be locked out for 5 years. Part of PEMCA is we want to make a stable, sustainable healthcare delivery system. And we don't want people jumping in and out of the risk pool, causing more fluctuation in the rates than we already have. On the PPO side, it's a little more dramatic. Leading up, there are a lot of increases going on. Back in 2008, we introduced the low-cost per select plan. So you'll see the big decrease from the second column to the third column as that went into effect. And then it really held down rates into the following year. And then there was a market adjustment the four following years. And what that was everybody saw this low-cost plan, and everybody jumped into it. And all the really healthy people that weren't using the plan jumped into that risk pool. And what happened was only the really sick people were in the PERS care plan, the 90-10 plan. So we had a very small, very unhealthy risk pool. And so those increases are really reflective of one small risk pool, one plan. And we had an adverse selection going on. All the sick people were in one plan, all the healthy people were in another plan. So in 2014, the next valley, what CalPERS did is they did a risk adjustment. They combined all three risk pools of the three PPO plans and brought parity back across the plans by combining the risk pools and setting the rates accordingly. So we've seen a more stable rate increases across. And now we're back into another adjustment period where people are kind of weighing their options and go, okay, well, I don't really need per select. Maybe because the costs are more comparable, we'll go to choice. And so we're seeing those three plans kind of balance out. So CalPERS does proactively try and look at the trends and the premiums and the cost, and does try and implement cost control measures into them. That's the end of the presentation that I have. I gave you a brief overview of PEMCA, some of the unique features of our program, things we do to control the cost, talked about the plans, the monthly premiums, and the premiums histories. So at this point, I'm available for questions, comments, and if not, I can follow up with the items.
May I please ask one question?
Of course.
Thank you. I don't know if I misunderstood this or not, but you had said as long as Sarah chooses to be in PERS, everyone is covered, active employees and retirees. And retirees are always eligible, even if they opt out at some point to something else, they can always come back in. Is that correct?
Correct. As long as you meet the eligibility requirements, you're always going to be eligible.
Okay, but actually that wasn't the question I intended. If Sarah terminated from PERS, okay, just say that I retire in 2 years. And after 5 years, Sarah decides to terminate with PERS. Then am I, as a retiree, no longer covered because they are my employer, so I go with them?
Correct.
So I will no longer be covered under PERS if I retire and Sarah terminates.
Under our plan, you would not be eligible to participate in the program. However, if Sarah did go somewhere else and chose to extend benefits to you, I mean, that's... Under our program, under the regulations of PEMCA, you would not be eligible to participate in the program.
Thank you.
What's the advantage of going with you as opposed to other options?
That's a really big question. Typically we talk about the rates and the stability. There's been, as you've seen, a lot of fluctuations lately. The cost control, the admin fees, the lowest in the industry. As such, though, agencies really need to be self-sufficient. Agencies are responsible for processing all the enrollments and transactions for their active employees. We are medical benefits only, so the employer does need to contract for vision, dental, and the other ancillary benefits externally, so there's added responsibility there. The benefit of coming to us is potentially a cost savings, and it varies widely across the industry. I've brought some agencies in that save $14 million annually coming to our program. And there's others where it costs an extra $5 million. So it's really on a case-by-case basis of whether it's beneficial for an agency to join our program or not. And
a little bit more than our staff will have to do, you said, for enrollment processing and stuff?
For enrollments, yeah, they're self-sufficient. They would have to log into our website and process the enrollments themselves. I'm always available as a resource, and we have a dedicated call center that can assist. All of our plans, all of our carriers are actually required to maintain a dedicated call center and portion of their website for our programs. Those times are under 1 minute. Our call center is about 2 minutes at the most right now. So if you do have a question about your plans, you can call somebody directly and they're going to know the specifics of our plans and not have to get bounced around.
You mentioned about moving out of the country. If I were to choose Kaiser now and I retire in 5 years, then I stay in the area, and then 2 years later I choose to move to Spain, would I be able to switch plans at that time?
Yeah, so most of those would be covered under qualifying events. Retiring, becoming Medicare eligible, moving, those were all qualifying events, and you can make plan changes at that time. You can also make plan changes during our open enrollment periods, which are always in the fall, mid-September to mid-October, typically. Did I see a question here? Go here and then we'll come back around to you.
Go over there.
The rates that you're showing, those are the total rates, but it doesn't necessarily say what the employee share is going
Correct, and that's really not for me to speak to. That's between you and your employer.
One of the things that was mentioned years ago was that CalPERS is the big gorilla in the family when it comes to negotiations. So you, I presume you negotiate with Anthem and Blue Shield, Kaiser and United Healthcare for rates, is that correct?
Yes.
How often do you do that, and who does that for you?
We're actually, we contract in a 5-year cycle. The rates are developed annually though, so the current plans that we introduced in 2014 will be around through 2019. Our health policy and research division under Doug McKeever, they head up the negotiations and rate development.
How long has Doug McKeever headed this department?
I'm not sure when he started. I've been around for 3 years and he's been there longer than I have. I'm not sure when he started in that area though.
I don't want to mix apples and oranges there, but I don't want to have you mislead anyone unintentionally. These are not 5-year rate guarantees.
No.
This is a 5-year agreement you have with the carriers, and you annually renegotiate rates.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. Yes. So the HealthNet, United Healthcare plans that we introduced in 2014, they will be here till 2019. That's the 5-year contract, but we do annually negotiate and develop the rates.
Big difference.
Matt, the Kaiser rates up there, are those for Kaiser A or Kaiser B?
Ours is Kaiser California, so it may be different. I haven't heard reference to a Kaiser A or B before, so unless you can provide some context, I can't address that.
Matt, do you have subcarriers for the PERS Choice, Select, and Care? In other words, we're talking about traditional carriers with Anthem, Blue Shield, Kaiser. Then we drop down to the identifier is PERS Choice. That is a health plan. Who negotiated that?
CalPERS did. The PPO plans are self-funded plans, so we actually own and control the PPO plans. We use the Anthem as a carrier to administer those plans.
Okay, you've got the ASO role. I guess I'm thinking about the negotiation of rates role.
So as far as they set the rates, or do we set the rates?
The hospital has a rack rate, a retail rate of $1,000 for something. Anthem will go in and negotiate $380. Okay, Blue Shield might be $410. Kaiser has its own facilities. But you see what I'm getting at here. Who negotiates those rates for the PPO plans?
I believe the carrier does, but I Anthem.
So they may be Anthem's rates.
Right. Okay. I would have to go back because that goes back to your question earlier about the market rates versus negotiated rates. And right. I'm not familiar enough with that subject to speak to it.
You haven't made any reference to the ACA requirements where they get into platinum, gold, silver, in other words, the four tiers, and you've got to be in at least the lowest tier in order to qualify for the required coverage. What tiers are these?
That's a fair question. As I said, these would all be considered platinum plans.
They're all platinum.
Because they all have a 95% to 96% actuarial value. The per select is the lowest actuarial value, and I believe it's about an 84%, 86%.
I believe silver is 80, and
so that would be a silver plan. We do not offer a catastrophic plan or a copper plan. We don't grade our plans that way. There is requests from the general contracting agencies for a bronze plan, a low cost plan. There is talk of developing one of those, but I'm not part of those discussions and can't tell you anymore beyond that. Go ahead.
Is it a CalPERS underwriting requirement, or would it be left to the employer to mandate that Medicare-eligible individuals enroll at the time they become eligible?
That is actually part of a CalPERS requirement. If you do become Medicare eligible, you do have to enroll in both Part A and Part B.
Right.
Our plans become a supplement to those.
That would have to be reflected in the employer's requirement as well, correct?
Or the... No, because that's one of our requirements. So under that's part of PEMCA. So if it's not part of yours, it's part of ours, you'd have to follow our rules.
That's my point. We would have to follow.
You would have
Sarah
to follow.
Sarah would have to follow the rules.
Right. Okay. Regardless if you wrote them into your rules or not, you would have to follow our rules.
Because that makes Medicare prime, which has a big impact on the rates. For
correct.
The
and our Medicare rates, I didn't put them up there because I assumed I was speaking to just active employees. But they are considerably less. They range anywhere from just under $300 to just over $400 for a single.
Is that something you also check during the audits, the eligibility audits, to determine whether or not they've enrolled in Medicare?
Yes. Our risk pool is just over 1.4 million members, and everyone in that risk pool does have to go through the eligibility. Even I had to go through it. So at the time, I was a dependent on my wife's plan, so she had to provide our marriage certificate.
So it's one of the criteria they check. One other question. Usually, almost without exception, when you're looking at cost and rate increases, it's totally a function of access. Access typically makes the difference. So if you were to look at access, would something like John Muir Health and John Muir Hospitals in Contra Costa County be the hospital option on all of these plans, or are they out of some of the plans?
Typically, there is a difference between the plans and the hospitals that they contract with. John Muir specifically, I'd have to look into it. I didn't do any provider searches.
The reason I'm asking is there may be for the least expensive plan that your only option would not be John Muir Health, it would be a hospital in Alameda County.
Possible.
Right.
Yes, completely possible. And that's and through the websites on all of the that the carriers have to provide for the CalPERS members, you can do provider searches and see exactly who's available, doctors, hospitals, medical groups in each plan. So you can research that before you make a decision.
Doesn't apply to Kaiser, of course.
Yeah, I would like to make a point. It's not a indicative of the quality of care either. I'm in one of the low-cost HMO options, and my medical provider is UC Davis Medical Group up in Sacramento, and you know they're on par with the Stanfords of the world, and it's a teaching hospital, and you get great care.
And where do you live?
I'm in Elk Grove.
Okay, well that's...
So it's not just because you're paying less doesn't mean you're going to get lower quality of care. You know, it's usually they charge less or get it right the first time and don't have to retreat something.
I agree, but it's an access question.
It's an access. Yeah.
It's the size of the panel.
Yep.
And John Muir has extraordinary leverage in this area at this point now because they have the lion's share of the primary care, the almost primary care, but certainly the hospital market in Contra Costa County.
So, yeah, and to check that, I'd have to go through and do provider searches under each plan to see if they're available. Christina?
I did do a provider search under the Anthem Select, and John Muir was an Anthem Select.
Okay. Just you have to bring your own medication when you go in. And your bandages have to come with you.
I did have one more, Matt. This going back to the annuitant coverage, where the annuitant drops the coverage, what you've described, I think pretty consistently, is that annuitant goes somewhere else, gets replacement coverage, is under the replacement coverage for some number of years, then comes back in. What happens when the annuitant doesn't do that? The annuitant drops the coverage for 5 years, determines that he, she needs an operation, and then elects to come back in. Do you allow that?
Absolutely. As long as they have a qualifying event or do it during open enrollment period to rejoin the program, they're eligible. And then
so it's the open enrollment period that would be the limitation then?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they can't just come back at any time. They can't, you know, go on the Covered California and get a catastrophic plan or a bronze level plan and pay $100 a month in premiums and then all of a sudden find out they've got cancer and need surgery. and then opt to enroll the next day under one of our plans. They, you know, that's not a viable scenario. But they could, you know, if that does happen, wait for a qualifying event. They could move, you know, they could, it could coincide with open enrollment period, enroll in one of the plans, and then January 2nd, January 1st are covered, you know, they could have their operation January 2nd under one of our plans. Yeah, under what part of the ACA is that you can't deny somebody coverage under pre-existing conditions. You know, all that stuff goes out the window. So if they're eligible and they want to join, we have to let them join. And that goes with any plan now.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. At this point, Christina? I'm sorry?
That's all that we have for the presentation.
Okay. Okay. Matt, thank you.
Matt, thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. We're going to go into board closed session.
Stand here or are we going to...